let's get into our study. So we are looking at building a biblical timeline of the final week of Jesus' ministry on earth. And as we've gone through this, we began the Friday before Passover. We've worked our way now up to Wednesday, Thursday time frame. As now Jesus has went from his public ministry, it's kind of at this point is over, and now what we see going forward leading up to the crucifixion is what he's his private ministry with his disciples. And in specific, what's coming Friday?
Crucifixion.
Yes. But before that, what is that weekend?
Passover,
right? And so that's, and as part of that, of course, you have the crucifixion occurring as well. And so as we as he's looking toward that with his disciples, they begin to make preparation for these events. So some of this we'll talk about in detail. Some of it we'll just kind of mention as we go forward. But if you look at Matthew's account, again, just a quick reminder of the Gospels and how I'm always fascinated with how they're similar and then how they're different. The two most similar Gospels are Matthew and Mark. They're not mirror images, but they're very similar. But then at times, I'm also fascinated with how sometimes one will give you more detail than the other. When you get to this time frame, Mark gives us a little bit more information than does Matthew. And so that's why I want to go and read Mark 14. And if we begin at verse 12, he's going to give us the same information Matthew does, but he's going to add just a little bit. So let's read this together. This is from the English Standard. Mark 14 and verse 12. On the first day of unleavened bread, when they sacrificed the Passover lamb, his disciples said to him, "Where will you have us go and prepare for you to eat the Passover?" And he sent two of his disciples and said to them, "Go into the city, and a man carrying a jar of water will meet you. Follow him. And wherever he enters, say to the master of the house, 'The teacher says, where is my guest room? Where may I eat the Passover with my disciples?' And he will show you a large upper room furnished and ready. Prepare for us." And the disciples set out and went to the city and found it just as he had told them, and they prepared the Passover. And so there's some Passover, there's some preparation that needs to be done for the Passover. And it's just kind of fascinating that we get a little bit of detail here, but he doesn't go into why is this guy going to be expecting them? How has this been set in motion? But he just, all we're given are the instructions he gives to the disciples. One thing I do want to know, when it mentions the word unleavened bread, that's just another name for the Passover. So don't get confused about that. That's not two separate things. That's the same thing. It's just sometimes called unleavened, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and sometimes called the Passover. Of course, the Passover goes back to what?
The being released from Egyptian bondage.
Yeah, so it goes back to their time in Egypt. With the final plague that God sent on the nation of Egypt, when the death of the firstborn occurred in Egypt. However, God in that same moment protected those of His own when they put the blood. You remember it wasn't just the blood, but they went through the sacrifice of the lamb and then put the blood upon the door. Post and the top of the door frame, and they would be protected from that curse. All right, so they go to prepare this. Now, we talked about this in our study on John, but there are three very significant feast days for the Jews. Do you remember what they are?
Yeah.
Okay, here's one. I'll give you that one. Passover. Can anybody give me the other two? There's two others. What's that? The tabernacles, right? The Feast of the Tabernacles. There's one that comes shortly after this one.
The Pentecost feast,
right? Now, the Passover feast represents what? That being freed from Egyptian bondage. What does the Pentecost feast represent?
The first fruit.
First fruits, right? It's God blessing their harvest, God continuing to bless them. And what does the tabernacles represent? Wilderness wanderings. That's when they would go and they would make tents and live in them. And it would be a reminder of what God did with them in the wilderness. So the Passover would take place in the first month of the Jewish calendar. And Pentecost would take place 50 days after that. And then when would the tabernacles occur? Or the tents? Be in the fall. It would be at harvest time. And so those are the three major ones. Now, you had a major, it's not a feast, but you had one other really major event. Do you remember what it is? The Day of Atonement. And that's the one time a year, the one time a year, the high priest would enter the most holy place and him alone. So this is the very beginning of that important observation by the Jews, and Jesus is going to partake of it with them. Now again, it doesn't explain why this owner is going to be expecting them. I guess we're left to assume that Jesus had done some groundwork or some way God had with this man. But they go and find just what Jesus said, and they go and prepare for the feast in the upper room. All right. Let's see. Okay. Luke 22 also records this. We won't go through that. It's much, pretty much the same thing. But you can look at Luke 22:7-13. You can look at Matthew 26:17-19. And what we read here in Mark 14:12-16. So that ends the day.
Wasn't there a day of Jubilee that was supposed to be
Yes.
A day to holiday?
Now, yes, and there are many holidays in the Jewish calendar. That's true. But there are four major ones. I believe the Day of Jubilee was not every year. I need to go back and refresh. So that was not something every year, but it would be a big day when it occurred. Now, there were also different days, and I should say this, that were special, where the men of Jerusalem, the Jewish men, would not have to go to Jerusalem. But on those four, the men of Jerusalem were expected to go to Jerusalem. Now, there were little carve-outs that you could make. And this is not really to go back and go over all that, but you could miss up to three or up to two, and then you go the third year. And there were certain things that if you were far away from Jerusalem, if you just couldn't make it, you could save up. But in general, the men were expected to travel to Jerusalem to observe these feast days. And that's another reason why Pentecost is so full of visitors, and why Pentecost would be full of visitors as well. All right. Any other questions, comments? All right. Exciting stuff. But this is important. So as we end the day, we'll then wake up Thursday morning, and we will go on into the next day. So as we get into the next day, we're talking about Thursday, Friday. It would be, why have Thursday on there? Should we just Friday? But this is the start of their Friday. All right, so again, their Friday begins when?
6 p.m.
6 p.m. on our Friday. And that's when their Friday would begin. That's the time frame that they would begin to eat. Now, this is that whole work with the time stuff, this is when it kind of gets significant. So as we get into what we're going to talk about now, we need to kind of understand again the time and how it works. So we're beginning their Friday evening.
Thursday.
No.
6 p.m. Thursday evening would be their Friday.
Would be their beginning of business.
Would begin their Friday.
Okay, you're right. I'm sorry. You're right. I got off. That's why I have Thursday on there. I don't want to listen to myself. All right. I talked myself out of my own decision. You're right. Thank you.
Racing our clock.
This is what I get. I'm sorry. You're exactly right. So this would be our Thursday p.m. period. Our Thursday evening would be the beginning of their Friday. Thank you. They would not call it Friday. It would be their fifth day of the, or their sixth day of the week. So that would begin Thursday evening. They would begin their day. And so that's when they're partaking of the Passover. So let's go. I'm going to look at this text in a little more detail. So again, there's a lot of similarities between them. I do want to start with Matthew's account here. So if you go to Matthew 26, and this is a long process. When we get to the time frame when he institutes the Lord's Supper, one thing we need to remember, that's at the end of a long time together. He did that at the very end, because how do we know that? Right after he institutes, he says they sang a hymn, went out to the Mount of Olives. So just, I want to, the whole ceremony of the Passover was a much longer thing than maybe the picture we might get from just reading over the gospel accounts. It doesn't give us all the details. So they enjoy a quiet evening there together, partaking of the Passover. And then verse 20 says, let's go to Matthew 26:20. When it was evening, he reclined at the table with the 12. And as they were eating, and when it says they were eating, what are they eating at this point? The lamb, right? This is when they're partaking of the lamb and eating the things that would enjoin that. And he said, truly I say to you, one of you will betray me. And they were very sorrowful and began to say to him, one after another, is it I, Lord? He answered, he who has dipped his hand in the dish with me will betray me. The Son of Man goes as it is written of him, but woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been better for that man if he had not been born. That's a tough statement, isn't it? Judas then, verse 25, Judas, who would betray him, Matthew does not want you to get any hint that this isn't Judas he's talking about, answered, is it I, Rabbi? He said, Jesus said to him, you have said so. Now, as we've already looked, there's been some things leading up to this. In our last study, we talked about how what seems, at least from the gospel standpoint, to have been the moment when Judas finally made the decision to betray him.
The money should have gone in the bag which he was overseeing.
And that seems to have been the moment he just cracked. Now, the text tells us he's been pilfering money. Like, he's been doing things for a while that he shouldn't have been doing. Now, how long has it been going on? It doesn't really describe that. But it's after that then he goes to the chief priest and he makes this plan with them. So at this moment, one thing I want us to get is as they're sitting there, he already knows what he's going to do. He's already made the plans to do it. And it appears Jesus knows that. And so as they're there together, now, I used to think, how did the disciples not see what's going on here? But if you get yourself in the moment, what's been going on? Well, they've been passing the bowl around. And so you might see how what they may be thinking is, well, Jesus is making some kind of illustrative point about each of us. And so they're like, is it me? Is it me? How have I done this? And they become so inner focused on themselves that they don't see really what's going on. And so they miss what Jesus is really pointing at. And so this message really seems to be pointed not at all the disciples, but at Judas alone. And so Judas asked that question in verse 25, is it I, Rabbi? And Jesus gives the answer, you've said so. Now, when you go to Mark's account, it's very similar to Matthew's. I'll let you go and read that. That's in Mark 14, 17 and following. I do want to go to Luke 22. He'll give us just a little bit more info. Luke 22 and verse 14. Now, again, just keeping it in mind, Luke is writing to what kind of audience? Who was his original intended audience? The Gentiles. Matthew and Mark, who were their intended audiences? Jews. Matthew would have been the Jews in the Jerusalem, Judea area, most likely. Mark was written more toward Jews who are Hellenistic or Grecian, those living outside of the Judea area. Well, Luke really centers his focus, being a Gentile, on Gentiles. I just keep that in mind as we go forward. So let's go to verse 14. It's going to sound somewhat similar. But let's just read here together. When the hour came, he reclined at the table and the apostles with him. And he said to them, I earnestly desire to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. For I tell you, I will not eat until it is fulfilled in the kingdom of God. When you read the other Gospels, that reads a little bit different, doesn't it? That last phrase, when does it appear in Matthew's Gospel? It's after he blesses the cup. Right? He says, I will not eat this again with you until the kingdom has come. To eat again with you in the kingdom. But here it's a little bit different context. Luke may be giving us a little fuller look. It says, after that, verse 17, he took a cup, and when he given thanks, he said, take this, divide it among yourselves, for I tell you that from now on I will not drink of the fruit of the vine until the kingdom of God comes. And he took bread, and when he'd given thanks, he broke it and gave it to them, saying, this is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. And likewise, the cup, after they had eaten, saying, this cup is poured out for you. This is the new covenant in my blood. Behold, the hand of him who betrays me is with me on the table. For the Son of Man goes as it has been determined, but woe to that man by whom he is betrayed. And they began to question one another, which of them it could be who was going to do this. Luke's Gospel actually gives you a little bit not an opposing view, but maybe a clear view of the series of events that occurred. And isn't it interesting that he mentions twice the cup? And sandwiches in between it's the bread. I find that interesting. I wonder why Luke did that, why the Holy Spirit did that through Luke. And it's in mentioning the cup, what does he bring up? The second time. The betrayer. And that, of course, being Judas. And so, kind of interesting. Luke records that and a little bit more fuller way as you look at it. Okay. If you continue reading there, they get in a dispute about who's the greatest. That him bringing up who's going to betray him seems to have led to a discussion of who's the greater, which is interesting. They turn that discussion into who's the greatest. But I'll let you go back and read that again. But you see him, they're in the midst of that, and he brings up the betrayer. Now, if you go to Matthew and Mark, and you look at their continuing context, they do go from after bringing up the one who would betray him into the Lord's Supper, very akin to what Luke's doing. It's just the wording's just a little different. But if you go to Matthew 26, you have Matthew's recording of the institution of the Lord's Supper. Verse 26, Matthew 26, 26. Now as they were eating, Jesus took bread, and after blessing it, broke it and gave it to the disciples, saying, "Take, eat, this is my body." And he took a cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, "Drink of it, all of you, for this is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. I tell you, I will not drink again of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom." And when they had sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives. So again, you know this is taking place at the end of the night, because it's right after this they're going to go out to the Mount of Olives. So this, the institution of the Lord's Supper has been after they went through the whole ceremony of the Passover. Why might that be significant that he waits until after they've done that to then institute what we now call the Lord's Supper? Is there anything significant to that to you? Do you think about it? Why do it that way? Why not do it first thing? Yeah, at this point they would have been full. And Lord's Supper is not about eating a meal. Paul makes that point in 1 Corinthians. Any other things you can think of? Any other reason why you would wait to the end?
It seems like that would have been the preoccupation of that evening.
What was the preoccupation?
Passover or meal, then it would have been signifying the flight from Egypt and the rush to be home in the middle of the night. And,
okay.
The flight from Egypt the next day.
Okay.
It would have been the last thing on their minds.
Okay, it would have been a lasting image.
They would have forgotten about it by the end of the day or at the end of the day.
So he's trying to highlight it by putting it at the end to draw their attention to that right as they leave. What have they been doing all night? What's the night about?
Celebration.
Celebration. It's also about, it's a somber occasion though, isn't it? They've been eating that lamb. That lamb is the centerpiece of the night, isn't it? That lamb represents what to them? Let's get out of our Christian mindset and just try to look at this from a Jewish mindset. What does that lamb represent?
Freedom?
Any other ideas come to your mind of what that lamb actually represents?
Life.
What?
Life.
What? Hope. Hope.
The promise of God.
Promise of God. All of it is right. What about security? Protection?
The blood of the doorpost is what they were
while they were passing.
Yeah. Now, from a spiritual standpoint, this is really significant because what's going to happen in just the next morning, what's going to happen?
He's going to be arrested.
And then what happens in the morning after all of that? He's going to be crucified. And that lamb that they were partaking of last night, and that lamb for all those many years, that ain't going to be so important to Christians. What's going to be important is that lamb who's on the cross. I wonder, I'll never know, but at least on this side of life, maybe I can ask Peter about it later, but I just wonder about the years later, how often they spent thinking about this night. A night that they probably thought, well, this is going to be a normal Passover, we'll go through this and figure out things with our safety going forward, because everybody's really upset at Jesus, and how are we going to get him out of here, make sure he's safe. All that changed. And so I think one of the reasons, I'm just guessing here, but one of the things, I think he wanted them to go through the whole ceremony, that to have that time to think about that, so then he could really draw upon it and say, you know, that bread that you've been eating, that's my body. I'm going to sacrifice for you. That fruit of the vine you've been drinking, that's my blood. And so I think he's really trying to draw their minds into that moment, into understanding what a sacrifice is going to be given for him, or given for them by him. And so I'd love to have been a fly on the wall in that room in those moments. And they still don't understand, though. Yes, sir.
There's a lot that did convert to Christianity. It's going to be very awkward, it seems, to have the Passover and not think about what had just happened, you know, the previous year. Well, they probably had it up until AD 70. They probably celebrated it at some level. You
know. Yeah.
I think it's there to help the transition from the old into the new.
Well, and I'm also fascinated with, and again, there's just not anything written about it, but I wonder what that first first Lord's Supper observation was like. Well, what was that like? How would you like to have been there? And I would. What did that, you know, and I don't know. I'm fascinated by it. And I wonder if they don't look back and say, man, I wish I'd appreciated that a lot more than I did. I was there, and now I don't get another shot at that. This is a one-time deal that you get to partake of this particular Passover. So being a very monumental moment that they were able to partake of. Now, I do also find it interesting. One thing we can know is that this was something that continued on after the establishment of the church. If you just for a minute, we'll go to 1 Corinthians chapter 11. Paul is writing about this very observance after all of these events in the church in Corinth. And I just want to be reminded of what he said, what he wrote. So if you go to 1 Corinthians chapter 11, you want to read that text, and kind of it begins really in chapter 10, and we'll move to chapter 11. But that particular text is on getting it right and doing it properly in regards to the Lord's Supper. And so go to verse 23 when he gets into the heart of what he's writing. He wrote, "For I received from the Lord," that's significant, isn't it? I received from the Lord. This source of information doesn't come from some human, some other Christian who's told me this. I got this from God. I received from the Lord what I also delivered to you, that the Lord Jesus, on the night he was betrayed, took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, this is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me. In the same way, he also took the cup after supper, saying, this cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, or the cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes. So we know that this is what the church continued to do. This was something they practiced in their worship. Was not the Passover, but the Lord's Supper. And it's something that Paul intended for them to continue to do. And we know that's what the pattern of the New Testament puts forward, is the weekly observance of the Lord's Supper. And it was to serve as a what? A reminder for us as Christians not to forget what was done for us. Any questions about that or comments?
You were talking about Acts 2 as being those that were baptized that day were actually considered first fruit. You know, carrying over from the old law, you know.
Oh, you're talking about the day of Pentecost? Yeah. Yeah, that's a fascinating idea, too. On the day of the celebration of first fruits, here are the first fruits of the kingdom of Christ.
And then you also think Christ's resurrection, you know, because, you know, I don't know if you consider him a fruit, but the first resurrected. You know what I'm saying?
No, absolutely. I think it's good thought and something. Be interesting to continue to explore. Good thoughts, yeah. So, very significant moment in the life of the apostles, and in this final week, was this meal they're partaking of, this memorial feast. I think it's also interesting if you go back in the text, what did Jesus say? In Luke 22, 15, he said what to his disciples? I have earnestly, I have strongly, I have wanted to do what? Eat this Passover with you. And I think he knows what it all really means. Powerful stuff. Any questions, comments? All right. I have this out of order. But John, only. So we look at those three, what we call synoptic gospels, who are very similar in many ways. There's differences, but they're very similar. John, of course, is very different. What's unique about John is he does not record the institution of the Lord's Supper. Not there. Now, why did he not? I'd only be guessing to know why he didn't. But again, I'm often fascinated by what he does choose to record. And as that is the last bell, that'll be your cliffhanger for next week, is the washing of the apostles' feet. And what's the real significance of that moment for the apostles as we consider this night? Again, thank you all for being here. We'll be dismissed from class now and rejoin for our devotional in just a minute.